45 McDonald's items not available in the U.S. that should be. I'm going to guess that's on that list. Let's see. In Asia, they have a chocolate and orange pie. Russia has brie nuts.
Oh, that sounds great.
Welcome to another episode of the Scotchcast for the week of February 20th, 2015. My name is Thurbleton, and joined with me today is self-confessed cynic.
What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. All right. Pretty well.
And also, Durin.
I am also doing fine.
Okay.
Blazing start to this episode.
Yeah. It's we are just getting together. We've been having some trouble scheduling as well as producible episodes. I guess that's a good way to say it. But yeah, we're gonna do a quick one, hopefully, and just talk about what we've been playing.
Notice all of these unproduced episodes are ones I haven't been on. Just saying.
Well, they wouldn't have
it's
noticed
a shame,
that
though. I
what about you would have.
We need to find a way to get those episodes up. Like if like for example you send me shit and I do it, I'm fine with doing that as well. But we need to get those episodes up because
okay.
I like what we did.
I don't know how I'm going to be able to send a 4-hour raw file to
just chuck it in MP3. Fuck it. I'd rather get them up at any quality than just leave them languishing out there.
Okay.
In the eighth.
All right, we'll see what we can do. Yep. But today. Right, meow. We're going to talk about video games. Throne versus Durin. Just what you been up to? What have you been playing?
Boring Man Online Tactical Stickman Combat.
So Call of Duty?
No, sorry. I found this thing on Steam. I was just watching the trailer for it. It looks super dumb. And when did Stickman games come back in? Like, I remember that was a big thing back in like 2000, 2001.
I remember like 2000, 2001. Oh, yeah, like, it wasn't games, like, it was the animations.
Well, no, like, I remember playing, like, a few different, like, Stickman, like, Kung Fu fighting games and stuff back then. Like, it was huge Stickman back then. And, like, this is, like, the second one now I feel like I've seen on Steam in the last couple weeks. It's just, it's weird.
They're all 2D, right? I'm just trying to imagine.
Yeah, it's all 2D stuff, yeah. It's just, like, what it is, it's, like, it's 2D, side-scrolly, Stickman stuff, where, like, the stick guys are, like, incredibly well animated, like tons of frame animation for the Stickman doing
that's,
all kinds of
cool.
Like in this one there is it's a shooter, so it's not nearly as like cool, but like the Kung Fu ones, that's kind of the neat part about it, is like the animations were so fluid on, like, you know, roundhouse kicks and all this crazy flipping and jumping and stuff, and it was kind of floaty but felt pretty good.
That sounds fucking great. I don't know,
yeah, like, I remember loving the hell out of it back then. And then, like, it all went away. And then, like, apparently in the last couple weeks, someone decided, hey, let's make Stickman games again. This one's free to play, so I guess I'll probably download it and waste some of my life on it.
I like it because we can say the Stickman games, and it's not actually a franchise. It's just a concept. Because it sounds like a franchise. Let's make a new Stickman game.
Actually, on that subject, just a quick aside, just because it looked like, and I probably ended up playing it and giving a review on it, I guess, the game, I don't know if you recall, a while back, there was a developer who threatened to kill Gabe Newell, and his game got taken off Steam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that company sold the game to another company, and now the game Paranautical Activity Deluxe Atonement Edition can now be played, purchased on Steam and played.
Is it even worth, like... is it worth your time at all?
Apparently,
apparently
it was actually a pretty decent game.
Yeah, no, it's actually
pretty positive reviews.
It's actually a really good game.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, I don't know, like, super good or all, but yeah, it's kind of voxel. It's that's why on the subject of, like, Stickman, it's kind of
right.
Old school Doom meets Minecraft, I guess. I don't know, but yeah, it's an interesting game. I guess I'll have more to talk about it once I played it, but yeah,
I didn't even know what a good game is at the moment.
Yeah, it's when we get to what you've
been
playing.
I'm in a weird place right now.
I can tell you about a good game.
Okay, tell me about a good game.
So I've been playing Final Fantasy 13.
No, a good game.
And it's like in the same series as a good game. So
okay, yeah.
No, actually, okay. So when Final Fantasy 13 first came out, I was definitely in that camp of like, fuck this game. This is not the Final Fantasy that we deserve. You know, this is some linear ass bullshit.
It's the Final Fantasy you need right now.
And that's the thing. It's like, you know, years later, I came around and played it again and realized, like, no, like, there are some issues with that game. Linearity being the big one for me. You're literally just like holding forward for the first like 35 hours of the game, waiting for the next cutscene and occasionally fighting stuff in the middle. But the thing is, like, the combat is actually a lot of fun.
So good.
And it's pretty much the only fun of the game, but it's okay because you're in combat like every 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's like most of the game.
But at the same time, the combat is also where my other issue with the game came in. I thought that they were so close with that combat style of like still keeping the sort of like the active time battle system thing going, but like making it feel more engaging, or more so making it feel quicker paced. But the problem I had was with the way they did the paradigm shifting and stuff. It took the player choice away, where you couldn't micromanage your fighting the same way you did before. Like, one, now you only control one character. And two, because the fights were so fast paced, and because you had to worry about the shifting paradigms and everything, and watching health bars constantly, you just chose auto battle for everything. You just auto battle for the entire damn game. I feel like if they could find a balance between like the paradigm shifting was a really good idea, and speeding up the combat was a good idea, but if they could find a way to hold those two things intact in the combat, but still allow the player the time to actually micromanage the fights, you know, choose attacks for their characters. I guess what I want is something kind of between Final Fantasy 13 and Final Fantasy 12.
You're describing, right? You're describing the Persona battle system.
Kind of, the Persona battle system is basically a sped up version of the Dragon Quest battle system, which is kind of the standard.
Yeah.
Old school battle system. It's like, it's basically
it's
without all of the gauges.
I'm not sure about Dragon Quest, but at least the idea of the Persona battle system is much like paradigm shifting, especially with Persona Q rather than Persona 4. All your dudes have entirely variable skill sets that you'd swap between within battle. In Persona Q, you can't do mid battle, but like between battles, you can swap your entire skill sets.
So something just occurred to me. What I'm actually asking for, and what I've just realized, is they already made that game, and then they redid it. 10-2 has the best battle combat in an RPG ever. Like,
indeed,
god damn it.
I actually prefer 13, but only because
I prefer the way the characters moved in 13 better around the battlefield and stuff. It's kind of similar. Again, it was sort of like a step up from what 10-2 did.
For me, but it's then,
took some missteps here and there with how they
handled the addition. I like the juggling between keeping their I forget what it's called, like stagger bar, maxed. Keeping that going up as fast as possible while also having a tank, while also having like people to keep that bar up rather than rapidly diminishing. Like, if you only have three ravages, like sometimes you just can never get a thing on someone. So I love that. It's really cool.
And the other problem I had too with the game, and that's why like this time I have decided, fuck it, I'm just playing the game on easy mode because I don't fucking care anymore. This is the third time I've started the game, and both times before I was at least 10 plus hours in when
that's
I stopped.
That's just crazy.
That's exactly why this time I'm like, you know what? No, I'm easy mode all the way through. I just want to see this game to the end. Yeah. But the other problem I had with this game, and this again is just kind of an issue with the way that they designed the game, I guess, you know, around the narrative, is that for the first like fucking 20 plus hours of the game, you never have a full party, and they're constantly changing out your party members. And the,
it's
and
so fucking
the,
annoying.
The bigger issue with them changing out your party members was that every time they change your party members out, they wiped all of your paradigms that you created.
Yeah, yeah, because so you it's have to a go new back party. Through and, yeah.
So I was constantly forgetting to remake those paradigms, and inevitably I'd go into a battle and realize that like the paradigm that I like to use with this or that I would like to use for this fight doesn't fucking exist on their generic paradigms because all they have is bullshit ones. And so yeah, then that's, like
that's the bigger problem. The default paradigm in that game, except for like very minor like a couple of instances, are shit. Like you just, everyone knows that we.
The good part is on easy mode, relentless assault is really all you need.
All you need is like a soldier and two ravagers, and that's it. That's like it for most of the game. Like only sometimes you need like other paradigms. That's most of the time you can just do with that.
Yeah, like there was one boss where I actually had to have a tank. Like I had to have a sentinel out.
Yeah,
because nobody had to do it.
And that's kind of why I liked FF13-2 more, because it gets the difficulty scales in a much different way, and you actually end up having to use a lot of your stuff. But I've talked about that 2-hour final boss fight before, like doing it way underleveled was one of the best things. No, I just did it really unleveled, and it was like easily one of the most fun I've ever had in a Final Fantasy was that boss fight, because I did it highly underleveled, but because of how good the systems were, I could just like eke out the victory like one fucking paradigm shift at a time. It was good. But no, 13 doesn't quite go to that extreme, but it's definitely has some fun to it. I can definitely see somewhere between a 13 and a 10-2 being a sweet spot, because I probably lean close to 13 side.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and the other issue I had too with it with regarding the paradigms was like, you know, how, like I said, whenever it switches your party members out, it like wipes your paradigms. So that also happens when they finally do give you control of like, hey, you have all your party members. They've all finally come together now that you're 30 hours into the game. So now you can change your characters out whenever you want to. But when you do, we're going to wipe all your paradigms again. So if you decide you're going to try out this guy, okay, I'm going to put this guy in my party now. Now let me spend 10 minutes in here adding all my paradigms in again. Like, oh, well, that guy doesn't actually, you know, do well with this fight. I need this other person. Is there a synergist? Okay, well, now I got to put that person in. Now I got to redo all my fucking paradigms again.
And like, I, more I, don't
you, like,
when...
I don't know about you, but like, I actually, like, when I do my paradigms, like, I fill it up. Like, I every slot has a paradigm in it.
I always
rank them, like, you know, top one is the default, and it's the one I'm going to use the most. Second one has one healer in it and whatever else. Third one has, like, two healers if I need them. Fourth one is, like, debuff and buffing. Like, I actually do that every fucking time, so it's just so goddamn irritating.
I only did that when I had my final party. Like, at the start, I just had essentially three paradigms, like a sentinel, two healers, two ravagers and a soldier, and, like, a mixed party. And no matter what, that'd be it. Because exactly the problem, like I just couldn't be fucked like delving into every paradigm for everyone, especially since a lot of people didn't have specific classes leveled as you'd want them to until later in the game. So, they missed the mark on so many quests, especially the first half of that game. Like, yes, the problems are a problem, the paradigms are a problem, but more importantly, the characters themselves. there's parts of that game I just wanted to stop playing because I couldn't stand both the characters and the
I don't know what you're talking about. Snow is totally fine. And Hope is not a whiny little bitch at all.
I actually kind of like Snow. I hated the time when you had to play with Vanille and Vaz, like the black dude, whatever, I forget his name is. Saz, yeah. Like that whole stretch where it's just those two. I'm just like, I just want
to like that. The part I loathe the most is any time that I have to have Snow and one other person in my party. not because of the character, but because he does not meld well with any other one person. The classes he has by default.
He's
terrible.
Yeah, he's just a sentinel, and who the fuck needs just a sentinel?
If you throw him in like as a third party member, he can be okay.
Yeah.
But definitely, you know, there were a couple times where you had like just him and Hope, or just him and who else was he parred with at some point?
He was a lightning for a while, wasn't he? Or am I crazy?
I don't remember. There was another part too, I think, where he was partnered with one other person also. And yeah, he's fucking useless.
He's just fucking useless.
And I remember
battles take forever.
Yeah, I remember the part specifically with him and Hope where they're in they're going to Hope's hometown, whatever this fuck it's called, Palimpolum.
Whatever.
And
Palimpolum.
Like that No, that's actually the name of it.
You could have said anything. You could have said anything, and I would have believed you.
That's why I felt like I needed to tell you, like, no, that actually is right. I remember now. When they're like going through that whole phase there, like, that was literally the most grindiest, longest section of the game because they don't meld well in the fight.
Every so you fight stay forever takes forever in the
fight.
Yep.
Because you have a Ravager and a Sentinel. Whoopty fucking do. You're never gonna stagger anything.
Fuck that thing.
So that's tough. Basically, when I was looking through my list of games, that's what I spent the most time with. I'm trying to, like I said, I put on easy mode. I'm trying to basically just bust through that, get to the end of it. Mm. I already have 13.2 installed, so I plan on jumping straight into that one when I finish 13.
What is your end game here? Are you planning to beat it just so you can play 13.2? Because 13.3 doesn't 13.2 was amazing when 13.3 hadn't come out yet, because it left. It's like Mass Effect 2.
Like, I haven't finished any of them. So, like, that doesn't matter because I've never even – I've seen, like, video – like, I saw trailers of Lightning Returns. I know nothing really about the game terms of, like other than, like, I know you play as just Lightning. That's about it.
Yeah. My recommendation would be to play up until 13.2 and just accept the cliffhanger and assume nothing comes after that.
I'm gonna play Lightning Returns when it launches on PC. I'll play through that as well.
Are you just on a full death pact with the 13 trilogy right now?
Yep. So at the beginning of 2014, me and Shin and I want to say Revan and maybe one other person decided we were going to try and play through all the Final Fantasy games in the year of 2014.
Wow.
Obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah, no.
And for me, in my part, that was because I made the grand mistake of, okay, I don't want to play like 7 at the beginning because I've already played through that so many times. I know I enjoy it. I know I can get through it quickly. I want to get through the stuff that I know I'm not going to enjoy first. So I started with 13 and 8.
Oh, wow. Well, I liked 8, but fuck you.
But 13
is probably a bad
place. I did not get through. I got further in 13 than I got in 8. I think 8 I played, I want to say, like an hour.
It's a PS1 game. It's so hard to go back to any of those at the moment.
No, apparently I played 9 hours of it. I'm not sure how much of that was idling, but I did not get very far in it. Mm. And that game, I've always had a real tough, like, I've tried numerous times to go back to 8 and had a real tough time with it. Even back then, I could not stand 8. So, like I said, I plan on trying to play through all of them in 2014. That didn't end up happening. And then when I heard that they were re-releasing 13 series on
PC.
So, like, in preparation for playing through all these games, I bought 13 and 13.2. Or no, sorry, I already had 13 on disc. I bought 13.2 digital on the PS3 in preparation to play it. Well, when I saw that this stuff was launching and I clearly had not played through any of those last year... I decided, you know what, screw it. If I'm going to play through these games, I'm going to play them at 60 goddamn frames. So I did the smart thing, and I waited until Final Fantasy 13 launched on PC, and I didn't buy it. And then I waited until Final Fantasy 13.2 launched on PC, and there was a big outcry of the way they fucked up the 13 port, and they went back and fixed it, and then I bought both of them on sale for like $15 each. All right.
Okay.
So now I'm decided if I'm not going to play through all of the Final Fantasies, because some of those are going to be hard to get to, and honestly, that's a lot of fucking time.
Yeah.
I'm at least going to see I need to see. I need to see what caused the rest of the Final Fantasies to not happen. I have to see this through. Because, like, we should have had multiple Final Fantasy games by now, but instead we have Lightning bullshit, and I need to find out whether it was worth it. I think I already know the answer, but I need to find out for myself.
It's really fucking annoying because in 13 itself, not necessarily 13.2 or 13.3, I really like Lightning, like, as a character. I really like her. She's one of my favorite Final Fantasy heroes. Just because she's just a fucking badass, doesn't take shit from anyone, and doesn't accept anything on surface value.
This explains why you liked Snow and I fucking hated him. I need characters with depth, and those characters are fucking as cardboard as they come.
Lightning's probably the deepest character in that game.
Well, okay, at the beginning is where I hated her. The further along the game goes, the more interesting she gets, and the less interesting Snow gets.
Oh, yeah, Snow comes like starts as a really cool dude. He's like high fiving everyone and ends just like as a whiny bitch. I don't like
his I feel like the progression of Snow and Hope at some point intersected, and then they kind of like they're becoming each other's original characters.
Yeah,
like, I feel like by the end of 13, like I'm gonna be like, yeah, fucking Hope, you.
That's pretty accurate.
Fuck that bitch, and then like Snow, like cool. Fuck off, go fall off a fucking volcano or something.
See, I only like Snow because I like the way his character looks, and he's Troy Baker. So I just have a natural.
I liked Snow when I first saw him because he reminded me of the Brawler character from 8, which was like the only redeeming character in that entire goddamn game.
Oh, come on, Irvine's not bad. It's cool as an asshole though, but I like him anyway.
Irvine's just a bitch.
Yeah, they're like the progression of Lightning and how she like comes to terms with her situation. She's actually a really fucking cool character. I constantly point to her when people say Japanese people don't know how to write women in games. I think she's done because her sex has nothing to do with how she progresses in that game. It's really fucking cool.
Yeah. I think she's probably one of the best written characters in the game, which I mean is good because she's kind of in all of them. So,
no, she isn't. You haven't played 2 yet.
She's in that game. You just don't play it.
Nope.
I've seen the trailer. She's in it.
It's us DLC, man.
Oh, God damn it. So they pulled a Metal Gear 2 is what you're telling me.
Yeah, you're not playing it at all. All
right, well, before Third falls asleep, we move on to Final Fantasy 13.
I'm here.
I'm still enjoying it. I think I'm getting close to the endish. I think I'm within a couple hours of hitting Pulse from where the story seems to be going. And that's the part I'm interested in seeing. So I'm going to continue with that one. The other thing I've kind of messed around with a little bit, I think I played a few hours of, watched me play kind of the very beginning of the game, was Far Cry 4.
Hmm.
So I wasn't initially sure whether I was going to pick it up or not because I still haven't finished 3. And then I decided, fuck it, they're not actually tied together whatsoever.
Hmm.
And I've been hearing all these great stories coming out of people who have played 4 that I wanted to ride elephants too. So I picked that up on a sale on Green Man Gaming or something. And I played a little bit of that, and Third watched me like completely fail at the beginning because turns out you don't start with the awesome bow that you have in 3 or that I have in 3 after 30 hours of playing that game.
Right. That wasn't the part where you were failing at. The part where you're failing, and this is a failure on my part as well because I couldn't see it either. He walked along all 4 sides of a cage. Like he snuck into a camp. Snuck around all 4 sides of this cage with this lion or tiger or whatever is in the area, and could not find the door to open it.
Yeah, I was trying to like find the door so I could shoot it open from a distance or whatever to like kill all these guys and distract them so I can keep on running. Every fucking wall looked the same. I could not find a door anywhere.
And he was right next to it. Right next to it. I was
hiding in a bush inches from this thing. A guy would walk by again within like a foot or two of where I was standing. And I would occasionally like pop out and look around the building. Like I was not getting caught while I was doing this. Like I was looking around the building and I could not see, or the cage, I mean, could not find a door anywhere at all. And then I think I was like, what was I doing? I decided to try and run back behind something, I think, away from the cage, and then I got caught.
Right.
Yeah.
And then decided to run. But then like I kind of fell back into the game after a little bit more playing it and went back to my bow roots again. And felt pretty good. At one point, I took out the first outpost, and I did the whole same way I played 3. I kind of did recon around the base, got an idea of where all the guys were, where the alarm was, where the door was for the fucking elephant they were hiding, and managed to take the outpost. I took out the alarm, didn't shoot it. Actually, went up to the alarm thing and disabled it. And took out the entire outpost with only 4 arrows.
Damn.
Only 3 of which were actually shot at guys. The fourth one was shooting the door for the elephant.
That's pretty cool.
And was not caught the whole time. And I felt like after that, I was like, okay, now I'm playing fucking Far Cry. So, and it was like an early quest where you had to like go and like destroy a wolf's den, did that whole thing without a single wolf seeing me. So that's how I play those games, and I'm so glad that I can do that in this one, or I thought I could, and then
right.
I came across a new enemy they introduced in this game that was not in the previous one, called Hunters, that were right. It seemed to literally be created to say fuck you to this playstyle. So what these guys are is they're basically fucking ninjas. They sneak around. You can't fucking hear them moving anywhere.
Yeah,
they just kind of show up. I'm not convinced that they're not just spawning in behind me. they just kind of show up out of nowhere. They can see you through brush, so hiding in a bush or something, which would normally completely conceal you from anybody else, they can just see you.
Yeah.
They shoot fire arrows.
Right.
And they can charm wildlife to attack you and not the enemies. And the only way the charm goes away is by killing the original hunter. And the way they introduce these guys is like five at a fucking time in a base that's all foggy. So you can't see shit like, you know, 50 feet out in front of you.
That's fucking cool. I like it.
I did not like that at all.
I like it. That sounds awesome.
I can see them being interesting, like mixed in with other enemies. I think that was a terrible way for them to introduce them.
Yeah.
So
I like enemies that make you have to change how you do shit. As long as this doesn't lead to like an incredible like difficulty spike. Like, is that what essentially what this boiled down to? Like a massive difficulty spike out of nowhere? Or
yeah, like the way that, again, I think it was all in the way they introduced them. I think had they been introduced, like here's a couple of them mixed in with some other enemies,
yeah,
it wouldn't be nearly as bad. But it was literally like I went to this base and there was like four fucking hunters I had to kill in this first little base area. And then I move on to another little base area and there were like four more along with two of the guys that just like run at you with hatchets. So like I'm dealing with, you know, these hunters that are shooting fire arrows at me. I'm dealing with wolves that are trying to run after me because they've been charmed by the hunters. And I have the crazed maniacs with hatchets and machetes running after me as well. And all I have is a bow because that's how I decided to play the game. And like, no, don't get me wrong. I took out every motherfucker with a bow with my like nine arrows that I had or some shit.
That's fucking crazy.
But I didn't enjoy it. It felt pretty good afterwards, especially when I cleared the whole camp. And then like one of my like buddy guys shows up there and he's like, hey, blah, blah, blah. Oh, God, we got a cougar or whatever the hell it was. And so Big Cat just shows up and like murders him. And then I shoot that thing in the head. And now, I've learned to not get out of cars unless I'm up near other NPCs because they will alert me whenever there are eagles around. Because eagles are goddamn man killers.
I fucking love that. So dope.
Okay, so the one story I wanted to tell from Far Cry 4, because I haven't played a lot of it, so I don't have a lot to talk about. But there's one story in particular it's why I love these games. Mm-hmm. So I was in this river area, and I was fucking with these turtles because I wanted to see what they got you to know whether there was something I needed to hunt later. Because you can kind of see like, okay, this is what these are the skins I need for these current upgrades. But you can't see like, you know, okay, next upgrade I'm going to need this. So you never really know what you're going to need. So I've just been kind of gathering skins for stuff.
Right.
And so I wanted to see if there was something I needed for turtles for upgrading. So I was trying to take out these turtles, and they're a pain in the ass because they go inside their shell and you can kill them with a gun, but it's really hard to do with a bow and arrow. Turns out after a little bit of trying, if you aim it just fucking right, you can actually shoot an arrow into their shell and shoot them in the head and kill them. But I was messing with those guys, and I noticed there were like rhinos occasionally around. But I'd messed with a rhino earlier, so I knew they're fucking hard to kill. Turns out you cannot kill a rhino with nine arrows to the face. That's something you cannot do in this game.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if that's something you can do in real life either.
Well, okay, so nine arrows to the face will not kill a rhino. A tenth arrow that you didn't realize it switched you to explosive arrows will in fact take out a rhino. actually makes it kind of fly about 6 feet up in the air too. So this rhino here, I saw it kind of across the little river area. But I was messing with these turtles and everything, and I finally got sick of it with the turtle, and I wanted to see what kind of thing I got from it. So I just pulled out a pistol and shot the turtle until it died. Well, shooting that, like there were apparently some enemies just up the road, kind of up the hill on the road there, and I heard them yelling after I started shooting. I'm like, oh fuck, and I got enemies coming after me. I don't want to use a gun on them because I'm playing this bow only. So I pull my bow out and I'm like waiting for them, and I was like, wait a second, I got an idea. I want to try something. So I swim back across the river towards the rhino, and I aggro the rhino, and if I make like a left, there's like a bridge there that leads across the river. And so I aggro the rhino, and I run as fast as I can towards the bridge. And just as I hit the bridge, I see the guys on the other side starting to cross the bridge on their side. It was a real short little, like, you know, 20-foot bridge or whatever. See them kind of coming over on their side. And so I run up onto the bridge and then jump off down into the river. And I turn my view around, come back up out of the water just in time to see the rhino fucking just gore a guy right in the middle of his chest and knock him, like, flying about 15 feet backwards. And my problem was dealt with.
Nice.
So
there you go.
Things like that are why I play these fucking games. Like, that's just I love it. Those games are so good.
I'm eager to hear your first story of an encounter with a honey badger.
Oh, fuck honey badgers. Those things are assholes. I've already had a first encounter with a honey badger.
It was not pleasant, was it?
It did not go well for the honey badger. But I did take some damage, yes.
Yeah,
assholes.
Yes,
and those things are assholes, and they can take like 3 fucking arrows to kill.
Mm-hmm. That is true to life. I think it's factual.
What is their skin made out of?
Titanium, unobtainium.
Unobtainium. There you go.
Yeah.
aside from a couple other things I've kind of dabbled with, I played a little bit of a lot of games, but those are the two that I've kind of spent the most time with.
Cool. Boom. I was going to say, speaking of assholes, how do you guys feel about lichens? But that was a really lame segue, and I decided not to say it until just then.
And then he just did, so.
So, Cynic, speaking of assholes, what do you think of lichens?
Lichens are assholes. I don't know what you know, but I don't know. Okay. Lichens are assholes, but people on the internet are probably bigger assholes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll agree to that.
I've never
actually lichens.
Maybe it's a conspiracy. Maybe they're vampires. Actually, that's probably a spoiler. I don't know. So I've been playing The Order 1886 on the PlayStation 4. You guys and
on the PlayStation 4 video game home console entertainment system.
Have you been playing The Order, or have you been watching The Order?
So, here's the thing. What do you define as playing a video game? At what point are you, in fact, playing?
Okay, I will say this. I still consider you do play Metal Gear games.
I think you legit play The Order in it for a lot of it. Not all of it, and definitely not even, I'd say, half of it. But you do. So, okay.
I was just about to ask, is it at least half?
So Metal Gear. So I made a forum post straight after I finished The Order 1886. Because so a couple of days ago I went to Durin. Yeah. Later that night. I went up to Durin and Thurbs and said, "Hey guys, I'm gonna roll the dice, and I'm gonna buy The Order 1886 on release." I got like a random bit of bonus cash from the government, and I was like, "You know what? I'm just gonna may as well just spend this the worst and most." Most like senseless way I can and play a game I'm pretty sure isn't going to be that great.
up until you said isn't going to be that great, it would have been perfect to say just like you should buy Hotline Miami 2, except especially if it was with government cash. That would be the best.
I can still do that. I have some left there. In fact, any money.
No, you can't buy it. Oh, it's not for sale in Australia. And also, it is a good game, but probably will be a good game. It's not out yet.
So I really fucking like The Order. So that was the really shocking thing about this all. Like I went into it expecting it to be shit, and then reviews came out before I got the chance to play it, and it's averaging like 50% or some ridiculously low number.
Ignoring the reviews and the counter hype and all that, just like what's like, give the elevator pitch, I guess, of what The Order is, and then I will start grilling you on it.
So The Order is essentially Underworld, but set in 1800s. So like 1800s, 1886 particularly.
Yeah, so it's basically like steampunk Underworld, right?
Yeah, so it's a world where vampires and werewolves exist. It's in England. But instead of like some babe in tight clothes, you're playing as Sir Galahad, the dude with the sickest mustache in video games. And essentially get it with Nikola Tesla, because obviously, and everything else, like the ancient an order. Stop me if you heard this before, guys. That's like this like ancient protective force over humanity, protecting them from vampires and lycans.
Man, so this elevator is really long. I'm going to get to my floor soon.
So basically, at the end, you actually just like come out of the Animus, and you're actually in the Ubisoft studios.
if only. I don't.
I think at this point, every game needs to end that way.
The crazy thing is, right, in the order, you start watching, like playing slash watching it, watching it. You start watching it, right, and you immediately know that, like, you kind of already have an idea of what's going to happen. Like, you have an idea that, like, the game starts with the main character in a prison and then goes back in time. So you immediately know that, okay, whatever he's doing is going to go south. He's probably going to get betrayed by pretty much everyone. The evil guys are going to win for at least the first half of the game. And with that, like you said, it essentially sets itself up for failure. It sets us up for going, okay, it's going to be a really predictable dumb romp. But somehow in the way it executes story and storytelling and just how fast that game moves, like it's only 6 to 9 hours long. I think it took me like 8.5, 9 hours, and some people beat it in 5, but it just moves, and it uses that time well. It's like always moving the plot forward, the character development forward, like the world forward in many ways. It's always introducing new concepts and ideas.
You said that you watch probably more than you play of it.
Yes.
Are there like protracted cutscenes, or is it like, as you said, kind of moves? Like, is it kind of always in and out of cutscenes, or are there like, you know, the standard video game cutscene length things in this game also?
So I think like one of the surprising things, except for, okay, so the longest cutscene, if I was to guess in this game, would probably be 10 minutes long. And there's only two of those, and they're like at story pivotal moments. Like there's like the big heel turn in the middle and then the start or something like that.
So we are literally getting into like Metal Gear size cutscenes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a reason I pointed, like in the forums I made a like direct, I like Metal Gear and I like this game. That's my threat. I like this game, and it's not in spite of that. It's in some cases because of that. Because yes, it has 2 10-minute-long, probably maybe even longer, but cutscenes. But they're there for a good reason. They actually put like are meaningful to the plot, and they're from multiple points of view and angles and stuff that you couldn't necessarily play through. The problem with the game in many cases is that a lot of the stuff they do in cutscenes. And as I said in the thread, like 55, if I was to guess, percent of this game is cutscene or pre-scripted. So by pre-scripted, I mean you barely have control, control over the aim, but not much more. And everything else is the game. So it literally is less video game in like percentage numbers than anything except for things like to the Moon or like indie like storytelling pieces. So essentially,
or
this
had
is
had a
just,
full boyfriend.
Or kind of, well, yeah, it may as well be like at some point you have to think like what's the difference between this and a visual novel? Like it's the only real difference is like this has the production values to have everything animated. But aside from that, it may as well just be a visual novel in some ways. Like it's visual with like a game I could point a lot in terms of congruencies here would be something like The Walking Dead, which that game, if you think about it, is around 55-60% cutscene, but you
sure,
don't
but that
necessarily
build as
notice
an adventure
it.
Game. That's
yeah,
not
it's
built, as a third
built that way. Game. Exactly, and this is the thing I'm finding, and this is why I started this segment with, I think the internet can be pretty dumb. It's because there seems to be like a lot of the community that's very intent on trying to tell other people what video games have to be. And I've never been that. It seems like, and that argument, Duren, is kind of indicative of what I see as a problem. Might not be a problem, but I see it as a problem of, hey, this game has third-person action shooting in it. Does that mean that this game has to be a third-person action shooter? Like, does this game have to have all those tropes, all that runtime, the percentage.
No, not necessarily. But I think the bigger issue that a lot of people have had isn't necessarily that so much as, like, you made the comparison to The Walking Dead, and I think the big difference in where The Walking Dead, it's okay for it to be so heavy cutscene and so little gameplay. One does come down to somewhat to the gameplay style, mm-hmm. but more importantly, comes down to the price tag. So yeah. The Walking Dead full season is like, what, $30 maybe? $25, $30 bucks? Mm-hmm. This is a $60, or if you're in Australia, $80 game.
Yeah.
And you are playing very little of it.
Yeah, and that's my main contention is, like, I will probably be buying this game after it drops down to, like, $40 or something, maybe hopefully during a Christmas sale. But, yeah, like, what I am curious to know from you, Cynic, is, like, the parts that are gameplay, mm-hmm. there's something like I don't know who might have done it first, but I'm just gonna go ahead and say the Valve model of mm-hmm. like Half-Life, where they will show you a mechanic and then like they show you multiple ways to like use your pistol or something or I don't know, maybe the secondary fire on the gun or something, like just, mm-hmm. they'll show you something, be it an enemy or some item you have. And then squeeze as much out of that as they can in a gameplay sense. It's more like Half-Life is a game about the mechanics and first and the story second. And a lot of people love it for the story. How does, like, yes, the story in 1886 is definitely the high selling point, but is the gameplay any good when you're actually playing it?
So... And this is kind of why I made that comparison to The Walking Dead. In the thread, I talked about Metal Gear specifically because of the length of cutscenes. The big differentiator between Metal Gear and this is Metal Gear 4 played like a fucking dream when that came out. Maybe it has dated a little bit by now. But when it came out, that game was fucking amazing in many ways. Like, the stealth in that game was different from any other stealth game before and made stealth way more fun than it had been in the past. Shooting that game was the best it ever had ever been in the Metal Gear. There's so many reasons for that to be right. This game is more like The Walking Dead in that it feels like the third-person shooting element was the gameplay loop required for the setting and was justified by the circumstance rather than the driving force behind the game. So no, it's nothing like a Valve game. Like a Valve game, how they build the game or how it feels they build the games, they build the mechanics and then kind of build a game around that to make it fit. Or at least they build them hand in hand. In this, it seems like they built the story and the characters and the world and then made the gameplay to fill in the gaps of that. Much like The Walking Dead, where you have the sequences where you're fucking making, like, scrolling your mouse quickly across the screen to, like, put one dot over another so you can press a button to shoot a dude. Like, it's, and heck, that specific minigame is in this game. Like, there's straight up, like, massive parts of this game that are just fucking minigames as well. Like, well, not minigames, but cuts, like, Walking Dead-esque quick time events.
And yeah, but like it's crazy. The issue I have with like it is more like an old school adventure game, kind of like what's the the one that just came out where you're a skeleton. Grim Fandango. It's more like that than like Walking Dead, because Walking Dead people like that's what this new age, especially with Walking Dead, showed off was like those little mini games or whatnot, and like they change the outcome, they change the decisions you make, even on some minute level. Like, sure, the grand ending is the same, but the Order, it is a singular story.
Yeah, it's a singular story, and not even that. Like, they don't have fail states. Like, if you fail a quick time event, you immediately die in 99% of the cases. I can't actually think of one where you don't die at the end if you fail any of the quick time events in the entire game. It's to the point where like. You fail a quick time event halfway through a fight sequence, and then you have to start the fight over. Like it's kind of ridiculous how bad it is in some ways. And in no way would I equate this game in terms of quality to The Walking Dead either. Like The Walking Dead, I think, yeah, sure, it's 65% cutscene, but the reason people love The Walking Dead isn't because of that. It's because it's a choice-based story that evolved to player influence, and it has and made like dramatic steps forward in terms of how you can do storytelling games. This does not do that. This is like a movie, which just happens to have like some equivalencies.
Just another side question on the subject, like since it is so like the visual aspect is the main attraction, how is it on loading like screens? Do you see a lot of those, or are they mostly hidden by? Okay, so nice.
None. Yeah, it's like the only times that you load at the start of the game, then from there on you only ever load when you die, and then there's like a five maybe less, like maybe 2-3 second black screen, and then you're just back in it.
It would be great if just like after the like the middle point there was just like an intermission, like a black screen with just like text and fancy writing, intermission. Goes for about like a minute or so and then back to the game.
But here's the thing, right? Like loading screens are usually to load in new assets and shit for the next area. So an argument can be made that with the pure amount of cutscenes that are in this game, most of that could be hiding loading screens. Like, I wouldn't know. Yeah, I have no idea.
I expect that's what it is.
Yeah, it's incredible. Because as some people in the thread pointed out, I didn't feel the particular need to, because I think other games have done it pretty well as well. But there's definitely parts in this game where you cannot tell that it's gone from in-game cutscene to cutscene. I don't even know if there are pre-rendered sequences. I know that for everything in the game that looked so good that it looked like a pre-rendered sequence, he'd be carrying the gun and equipment I had going into that sequence, which meant that actually it was rendered real time. Like, it was nuts how good not only the graphics are, but how good they transition between graphics and gameplay. To the point where, like, yes, it's 55% story, but it's not like it's like a massive chunk of cinematic and then a little bit of gameplay, then a massive chunk of cinematic and then a little bit of gameplay. It's like constantly dipping between the two mediums of essentially gameplay or gaming, and but doing so in such an effortless manner is kind of crazy. Like, there's so many things this game does right that it pisses me off with how much shit it does wrong. Like, it's they have, like, for example, there's a shitload of cool guns in this game. But in the end, the most effective weapons I used for most of the game was having a pistol, a six-shot pistol, which one-shot anyone, and the sniper rifle, which one-shots anyone. And it essentially gets to this point where you find these like generic ammo pickups that give you like ammo for no matter what you're carrying. So I went through most of the game with two guns, even though they have like all these other like really interesting slash like fancy guns with like crazy special abilities. Like, for example, there's a gun which the main fire fires like all this gas out, and the alt fire sets all that gas on fire. So the gas does no damage and the alt fire does no damage, but together they do a shitload of damage and everything inside that gas burns. But because you're like spraying an area first and then lighting on fire, you may as well just have headshot everyone with a sniper rifle. So it's like it's sad in some ways, because the reason we use the weapons we do today in any form of like warfare is because it's because those weapons are so efficient. Those weapons work so well, and the fact that they're in this game kind of invalidate everything. I'd rather them have gone crazy with it and just had none of the weapons be normal, or you couldn't pick up enemy weapons for whatever fuck up bullshit reason. Like, it'd be cool if they stuck to their guns a bit more there, but hey, whatever. Like, yeah it's only a part of it. I also really love the diversity of characters in the game, and that the main female character is Indian, and she's actually done in a pretty good way. She's not like a piece of shit Indian who I hate like listening to. I wouldn't be surprised if they got a famous Bollywood actress for her part. She does really well, and so does her daughter in the game. Anyway, yeah. So overall, I like the order for not only itself but also the discussion it engendered with people essentially being in two camps, one being like games need to be games first and story later. Some people, but there's a vast minority of us in the other camp, which is like, no, like straight up, this is just as valid as any other game. Like, it's just that, you know, whether you like it or not is a different question. But the fact that 55% like cutscene was surprisingly fine for me. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's kind of,
I don't know how I feel. Like, I don't think I don't expect all games to go in any one direction. Just going further and further out in every direction. But I just think it's neat that like there's so many big budget games have tried to like replicate the blockbuster movie like mentality. So far, in my opinion, the one that does it best is like 30 Flights of Loving.
I haven't played 30 Flights of Loving.
30 Flights of Loving is a quality game. Cool. It's a quality game that is more or less a movie, but like it basically, big budget games need to do jump cuts. Seriously, they don't like it's a great filming editing tool, and
I'd say if you're out there and like games for their story, which I'm not sure if there is anyone or many people at all listen to the show, seriously consider checking out The Order. It's definitely not for everyone. I can definitely see why a lot of people fucking hate that game, but it is. I loved it. I was like legitimately shocked to the point where I started my Game of the Year 2015 list. At which point I started. Usually, how I make a Game of the Year list is I just enter the games I've finished. But then I entered the two games the one game I finished this year is The Order, and it was like number one. And I was like, it's not going to happen. And I just entered the games I was planning to buy later this year. So at the moment, it's sitting at like number seven on my tentative list.
I mean, like it's a great game. I think Jeff said it best in the preview thing of just like it's a rental. it's worth playing, but
don't pay $80 / $60 for it. I wouldn't say that unless you like really want to. If you buy games to support developers,
do you think we'll see it later on the as a PlayStation Plus, like come like November sort of thing?
I kind of hope so, like, because that's kind of the perfect venue for it. It's zero like commitment. You can start it, and if it grabs you, it grabs you. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And I think it will grab more people than it doesn't. Story.
With the way the reviews seem to be hitting, I imagine even if it doesn't hit PlayStation Plus, that game is going to get heavily discounted very, very quickly.
Because I want to play it. I want to see this train wreck.
Yeah,
with open eyes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know.
And it's crazy because you're right. Like I think they missed the mark in terms of what most people want from games. But somehow they did it in a way that, like, some of us out here really fucking love what they did. And I think that's kind of cool. I think they went for something. I think they had a specific idea in mind, and they went for that. It just turns out that is only something a couple of people like rather than the majority.
Do you think it was kind of light on mechanics because it was it's a tech demo? It is, like, the non-racing version of a early release game?
Kind of makes me wonder, like, is it light on mechanics? There's like, it's like they took development effort and put it in weird directions. Like there's like a bunch of different ways to do quick time events in that game,
It's light on gameplay mechanics, but it definitely has a lot of.
It's like a variety. Like there's a lot of variety. The
scene stuff. Yeah. Okay.
But even then, like, it's not even light on gameplay. But it actually has more gameplay mechanics than some shooters I've played recently. Like, there's a full stealth system in this game, like a complete stealth system with line of sight and it's audio cues and sneaking up behind dudes. Like, it's transitioning between melee and range weapons and shit automatically while you sneak up to dudes. Like, it's got a full stealth system in it. It's got a full it's got a decent shooting system in it. It doesn't play as well as Destiny, like nowhere fucking close, but it plays pretty fucking well. It's got like a million ways to do cutscenes. It's got like weird hacking games in it. Like there's so much in this game. It's just like they don't.
I got one last question.
Here.
Is this game Frog Fractions 2?
Yes.
Okay. That's the end of video games. Not even talk about what I've been playing then. Everyone go out and play Frog Fractions 2, The Order 1886.
Woo!
I have been playing Darkest Dungeon, which is early access.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, it's a game on early access right now. I think it's the only place you can get it. It's like a turn-based strategy game set in like a Lovecraftian sort of world.
It's Lovecraftian, but also medieval, because Lovecraftian was...
I call bullshit on calling it a strategy game. It's a turn-based RPG. Like...
Okay.
Yeah, is it, like, wait, I think of the same game. This is the game with, like, the really,
would you,
like,
would you call aesthetic. Final Fantasy a strategy game?
No, it's an RPG.
Okay, then yeah, it's an RPG then.
Okay, cool. All right, we're on the same page.
I mean, like, there are
tactics, yes, that is a
strategy. Tactics then, yeah. Second word you said was strategy.
No. Final Fantasy Tactics is a tactical strategy game. Yeah, Final Fantasy is an RPG.
Okay, but there's... All right. So, okay.
Use strategy in how you do stuff, and placement matters, but that's not the same as, like, moving units across a like, isometric plane and having them fight each other.
Okay. So, Darkest Dungeon. It's a turn-based game where you go through... It's similar to, like, XCOM and, like, Massive Chalice and, like, all those games that some would call strategy. Where you send a team of up to four adventurers into dungeons that are, I'm just gonna assume they're randomly generated. The biggest challenge is you don't know how far, like how big the dungeon is, how many levels it is, before you go in. As soon as you like get to that first level, you can see the it's shaded, but you can see the whole map. But you progress in like a, it's 2D side scrolling. You know, back and forth. It's a traveling world. Like, you go left and right, but when battles happen, the bad guys just pop up. It's not like you don't go to another view and go to the battles. But yeah, it's you fight like ghouls, goblins, cultists, bandits, and it's this neat little thing of just like, you know, it's, your side will go, then the other side will go, and you'll do damage, lose health. But then you can also gain stress, either when things go wrong or there are specific attacks that the enemies will do that will, like, you know, has a chance to increase stress, and you'll get like, poison and bleed and all sorts of RPG elements, debuffs.
The game has a lot, draws a lot of inspiration from some of the, more obscure books of D&D 3.5. Like, it's essentially a way of doing dungeon crawling in a really interesting, like, cool looking 2D kind of fashion, because all, like, side scrolling, as you said, but it draws so much from D&D. It's the madness system and how that accumulates based on what can happen to your characters or what's happening in the environment is very, like, D&D.
It's very D&D, but it's also like, having read a lot of the Hellboy the comic books and just like that, like Mike Mignola's world, it seems along similar lines. Even the art style looks a lot like, I think the current guy who does the artwork, Duncan Frago, I think. It looks like very similar in art design.
It looks so sharp. I really like the look of that game. It's simple, but...
And even thematically, of just like... one of the core tenet, I guess, is your sanity. Like, you can lose health and you can die that way. And actually, a neat system is when you get to zero health, you don't exactly die. You're at death's door, and then any hit you take after that has a chance to kill you.
Right.
And you don't know what the percent is. You don't know the chance, and it just gets super stressful. And so, like, even if you just like top one health point onto that person, they're like, you know, they're okay for now. They'll be fine, but then like when you're at death's door, also it gets super stressful, not just for you the player, but the characters as well.
It's kind of abusable. Like, so no matter what, if they're like two health and they go down to one, they're on death's door, so they don't immediately die. Is that kind of how it works?
That's correct. But let's say, for example, they have a bleed debuff on them, and so it's the start of their turn. They take one damage, so they're back at death's door, and then they get attacked or something. As well. Like, there have been times where characters have died and there, like, wasn't anything I could do just because the time it took from, like, when my healer last went to his next turn, and it was just like, well, crap.
I think a large part of, like, why it's so rough is because healing is so difficult to do in this game. Like, it's, you only have four people in your party, which I guess doesn't sound like a big of a limiter considering what you can do in other games, but you only have like roughly five or six skills per dude. And one of the biggest things is those skills can only be used if they're in a specific spot in your party. So it's like four people wide. Think of that as four rows. If they're in the fourth row, they can use some skills but not others. If they're in the second row, they can use some skills and not others, and so on. So like in some cases, especially with enemies like attacking you from behind or whatever, like you can have your entire party transposed and have half the people in your party not be able to use their most effective skills. So healing in this case isn't something you can rely on. Like it's not like a Final Fantasy game where your party gets poisoned and you just cast fucking the equivalent of a Suna for everyone. In this, if you do have bleed on one dude, you're going to have to make the choice between healing him, moving your healer to back to his original position so he doesn't die in the next turn, or healing for the party. And the healing would only be like four. It's like there's no number inflation in Darkest Dungeon. It's all like really low D&D-esque numbers, which is really kind of cool as well.
So here's the part where I'm going to just like throw down most of what you said. I will quickly say at the tail end of the stress thing of like when their stress gets to 100, most of the time they will go in some crazy state that they will refuse healing. They will do like some sort of negative thing. They have a chance to do something positive where like for the rest of that dungeon, they'll be like, you know, valiant or stalwart or some other like positive trait. Right. But usually if they go bad, then they start talking crazy stuff and everyone else gets crazy as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, as for like the, I have never been attacked from behind. I have been attacked where I will get surprised, and what that does is...
Yeah, that's what I meant, yeah. It just randomizes your party.
Yeah, right? It randomizes the party. But even then, you're still not, like, down in too much of an issue. But then the big challenge is, like, that when you're surprised, you don't attack the first round.
Yeah. So you're immediately in the back foot. It's essentially like getting attacked behind in an old-school RPG. It's just, yeah, you get... you lose a turn, the enemy gets a full like round of damage on you, and you're all in weird places in terms of your turn, like your order in the party.
So the two strategies I've picked up on this, because I've watched people both like, you know, GameSpot and like Giant Bomb and like the big sites cover this game as well as the initial streamers, and a lot of people seem to be having trouble with this game. It is not challenging for me. Like I don't want to like talk, you know, like a lot of shop or anything, but it's just like. I've lost like two or three guys, and there's two big issues with that. There's two big like challenges I have with it, and both of which I think have a chance to get fixed in this early access build. The first one is like, well, yes, there's the general challenge of like, you know, it's when you get beset by like, oh, you're jumbled around or something. If you like, it's turn based, so you just take your time and they're like, all right, what needs to happen? Because you don't necessarily need to move the priest back, so long as if like the rogue or, you know, your barbarian or something is in the back and they move forward, the priest involuntarily just gets pushed back. And so it's like, which do I need to be attacking right now, or do I need to be moving other people in position? And so yeah, that like those are decisions that you'll eventually learn. The other benefit is, well, yes, you can only have four classes. But really, the only class I don't usually run with is the occultist, because everyone else, there you can usually like kind of multi-purpose build them. Mm-hmm. So like, I usually run with two. Like I have a main healer, and I have a guy who can also do healing, and then I have a main that like the jester is great because he has a thing where he just plays a little tune if he's in the right position, and it has a chance to make everybody lose stress.
Oh, cool.
And then, like, I have another character that is, like, they can lose stress, and, like, it's...
The Jester's also the coolest-looking character model. I love the way that thing looks.
And also, like, another neat thing about him, and the Jester can move across the entire four-spot lane. He can be in the very back and jump to the very front, whereas the Barbarian is really nice, like, good single-target damage, good, like, and it can also do, like, some multi-target damage. They can only move one space forward. They cannot move backwards.
Right.
Which really, like, that's, as a design choice, goes great into just, like, the idea of a barbarian.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's like, I'm only charging for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's between those two things, so, like, managing stuff, as well as kind of, okay, you remember the Banner Saga?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the way I cheesed it?
No.
Basically, I noticed that
Like, you know, with every other turn, you can make it so that you just make most of the characters weak, and so the heavy damaging characters attack less often. So you, in, like, you actually go out of your way not to kill some characters to make the fight easier. You can do that same thing with Darkest Dungeon of just, like, eliminating the most dangerous characters and then spending the later half of the fight wasting time by healing, healing back up to full, trying to reduce your stress down to zero. And then when all that's covered, then, like, kill the last guy. And then move on to the next fight.
That's cool. I mean, that's smart.
No, it's not cool.
There's no MP in this game is kind of what I was getting at. It's like, you just keep using things as long as you have turns. And when you have a turn, it's your whole party that has a turn, not just, like, one dude. So
yeah, but that's, I mean, like, I feel like I'm exploiting the game.
You are.
And they've actually, like, they've taken steps where if the fight takes too long, or, like, if they can tell that you're not, like, you know, attacking with enough characters, then, like, so one of your characters will say, like, why are we toying around with this guy? We should get going. And then, like, everyone loses, like, 10 to 15 stress, or gains 10 to 15 stress.
Yeah.
So they, like, they punish you for stuff like that, but I still do it because I can, it's still a valid thing.
I think that's cool. I think that's, like, a system that's open to using that way if you want to, which I like.
When you're not in dungeons, you go back to your town and you can, like, recruit more heroes. You can buy some items. There are ways to reduce stress, as well as if, like, your character has gone crazy inside of a dungeon, you need to use one of those things, like a tavern or a abbey to get rid of that effect. And there's, like, there's a neat little another neat thing about this game. They have, like, little, like, they have boons, and they have, like, permanent debuffs, I guess. Like, so they're plus 10% health, plus, like, extra damage when you're in this dungeon, or, like, the reverse of, like, you gain stress more, like, you lose stress resist in dungeon. Like, actually, like, minus 10 chance to dodge. And they have a new little, like, it kind of a way of, like, building a story, or, like, kind of making characters be more than just, like, their levels, because I think I'm, like, level 3 right now. It's still early access. There's, like, 3 zones. There's not a whole lot. I don't know what the total level is going to be, but you can still make these really awesome characters at, like, level 2.
Right. So is there much value in gaining a shitload of levels? Like, what's the level cap for a particular character?
I don't know I think level 5 might be the level cap right now. My guys are right now at level 3. And something to note about that is at level 3, they refuse to go on missions of level 2 or lower.
Oh, okay.
And so that's actually becoming a challenge. And that's becoming a challenge in itself. Because I want to get, like, you know, I have other characters I want to get. I want to get multiple teams before I start doing other missions. But then, like, there's, apart from that one aspect, there's not anything that is, like, driving me on to do more dangerous aspects. And that's actually one of my, like, critiques is you take a game like XCOM, that's on a timetable. Like, the monsters will get progressively, like, tougher and tougher, and you will start losing the, like, nations will pull out.
Fuck, how good was XCOM?
XCOM was really good.
Fuck.
Yeah. I mean, like, Massive Chalice does that same thing of, like, if you lose battles, the cadence will, like, encroach further and further upon you. And I don't, like, I feel like Darkest Dungeon needs something like that. And, like, again, early access, I fully expect, like, if they see that as a big enough issue, they'll find some way to solve that. Because right now, I just, like, unless I go in almost over-leveling myself, I really don't see any, like, incentive to, like, try and attack the Necromancer boss unless I, you know, am fully geared. But yeah, like, by itself, it's a pretty fun game. It's fun. I've sunk, like, I think 10 hours into it.
Cool.
In, like, several days, yeah. So yeah, that's more or less the one game, main game I'm playing. I've also been playing some other stuff, but it's not worth talking about right now. The other thing I did want to talk about is I saw the movie Selma.
So I've heard of this movie. I have no idea what it is. Like, what is Selma?
I know nothing about it.
This is quite nice then. It's kind of neat that, like, I can tell this to both Durin as well as an Australian/Indian cynic.
Hello.
So Selma is a documentary about the Selma protests and the march from Selma to Montgomery during the Black Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. I want to say 60s, 70s.
Yeah.
It like takes place just after I think Kennedy was assassinated. I think while during the time frame of the movie, like a couple of other key political figures are assassinated as well. Like it's not a good time for America.
Yeah.
And the movie does like it does an excellent job of just capturing like how bad it was back then.
Right.
There is some raw portrayal of stuff that like events that happened at that time. And that's the crazy thing. Like as I'm watching this is like, this happened in like my parents' lifetime. This happened in America. And I was, oh geez. That's okay. And it's just like, I don't really know how best to describe it. Like it's kind of like The Last of Us. Like in terms of like a really powerful story that is not necessarily like, you don't say it's a good game because it's a really depressing game.
Yeah.
This one, like, and even like the tail end of the movie, like, yes, they succeed. Like a lot of good stuff happens, but there's still a lot of bad that like they like, in some movies, you know, when the story ends, they usually do like captions of what each person like they led on to do. Mm. And just like going through some of those on some of the like the side characters, as well as Martin Luther King. It was just like kind of depressing still.
Yeah. Yeah. That shit was rough for that period of, especially Western history, not just American history, but history in the West. It's kind of crazy. I don't know. And it's one of those movies that is like so lauded that I'm going to probably eventually end up watching. Like I eventually watched The Imitation Game and that ended up pretty good as well. So
yeah. Some people criticized that, I don't know, like there may be some bad portrayal of some of the like the Southern characters or something like that. Like I feel like there were, I don't know if like they were put in a positive light, but they definitely like they weren't made out to be devils as much. Well, one guy was made out to be a devil, and it's this bad sheriff guy. But then like the governor of Alabama, like they all were people who just did not want to adjust to change. Sort of thing, but they weren't necessarily evil people. And like they kind of humanized a couple of the of people, and like I don't agree with what they did, like what like the, you know, some of the white people did back then, but yeah, it was just like people should go watch it, go see the movie.
It's like one of those things where people are people, and I love like media that portrays people as people. Like there's no such thing as like fucking good or evil in the real world. Like people have reasons for why they do things, except for maybe the criminally insane. Everyone else is actually has a perspective, has like desires, wants, a family, whatever. They do horrible things for what they think is the best of reasons, and I like.
But yeah, it's also the thing of like when like change happens or a. Mm-hmm. There are so many different ways I can compare this movie to like current events that happened last year, or even like from what I like after having watched it, I talked to a couple people who had like were alive during the time, and just like the mindset people were in back then on all the on multiple sides just reminds me of so many different things. Like the some of the youths. On both sides, it felt like 1930s Germany of just like people who were oppressed and pissed off and just mad.
Right.
They were just like, not Nazi mad. They were just mad. And then like the Germans eventually turned to Nazis as a, like, you know, scapegoat, the Jews and all that. But just like, they were just pissed off at everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, all I'm going to say is just like, that's my plug. Selma, go see it. I don't know, like Duren, like, have you heard anything of this, or like, did I do a good sell on it? Is there any questions you have?
No, I just, that seems like one of those movies that, like I probably need to watch at some point, but I need to be in the right mindset for it.
Yeah, it...
Like, it's not one of those, like, oh, it's a Friday night, let's sit down and watch a movie. It sounds like maybe more of like a rainy Saturday afternoon movie.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. Like, I saw it on the middle of a sunny day, and I kind of needed that sunny day to, like, bring me back up.
Yeah, it's that warm. I think you, for some movies that have an impact, like, say, your Selma or your Schindler's List, Requiem for a Dream, whatever, I think it is valid to say that sometimes you need to be in the mood to watch one of those. Especially if you don't know what you're going – sorry, if you already know what you're going into. Like, I guess for like Thurbleton, did you expect what you got out of Selma when you first watched it, or did you?
I mean, like, I going into it compared to leaving it, I was like kind of shocked about how much more they showed than what I thought they would, like, thought it was about, and just right. Like, yeah, I knew it was about protests, I knew it was about marches, I knew there were you know, police officers with nightsticks beating up people like running in the street who were just trying to do a peaceful protest. I knew that stuff happened. That is not the stuff that shocked me.
Right.
It was the stuff leading up to those things. Like, it's, I don't want to give stuff away without spoiling it. Cause like it,
yeah.
The shock factor is kind of like some of the stuff that like, you do not believe some of this stuff happened, like would happen. And that's the shocking part, is all of the, like all the stuff that was crazy actually happens.
Yeah. And it's not like American History X where you can watch that and say, oh no, that's just a movie. Yeah. It's real. It's kind of crazy.
There are no words. Yeah. There are no words I can say other than please watch it.
Yeah. It's definitely on the list. It's being so lauded that I think everyone needs to watch. A good cinema is something that everyone needs to at least appreciate sometimes, times a year.
And then just on the other side of the thing, like people who might get defensive about that, people who live in the South, it's kind of like what Drew said when he visited Vietnam, of just like people these days, like we're a whole new generation.
Yeah.
It is very important to know what like the events of the past so we don't repeat them, but it's, we don't have that burden of what, like, That's not on our shoulders. We can do better.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I need to watch that Unpressured Finance episode again. I've only seen bits of it. Yeah. I guess that's the show. Is that the show?
Yeah, you need to end this. I'm done.
Yeah, is that the show? I think that's the show, guys.
I also played Battlefield 1942. I'll talk about it another time. I'll play it some more again later.
I played Lords of the Fallen. It's pretty cool. I'll talk about it later as well.
I guess in a sentence, the reason why that's still fun and the new Battlefields aren't, there's an entire map where everyone drives a tank.
That's pretty cool.
That is what new Battlefield is missing. Everyone in a tank.
But I mean, isn't that just World of Tanks?
Yes, except it's a Battlefield game, so they can just go from one map to the next, and the next map is...
That's pretty cool.
You can get out of your tank and repair it and hide behind it, and then it blows up, and then you run for like 5 minutes until you get into another tank.
Man,
it's a really dumb game. I don't know how to end cool. this. Bye.
All right, so plugs before we go.
Go see Selma. Durin.
Yeah, it's Thurbleton's. Go see Selma, Durin. Anything?
No. I'm 1989, go buy it.
Okay.
I actually have a plug I wanted to say for a couple of weeks. That's why I kind of insisted we have a plug.
I can back T Swizzle. I will endorse Durin's plug.
There is a book that came out at pretty much the tail end of last year, and I'm just quickly looking it up. The premise of the book, this is actually on a totally side project. Like me and Durin have had like a discussion a year about our continuing efforts to get fitter and not be fat slobs. And at least once a year, I go back to like some of the literature on the subject to find out like why the fuck it's so hard to lose weight. Like, I'm in the military. I have dropped from 94 kilograms, that's 188 pounds, down to 80 kilograms, so 160 pounds. So I've lost like 28 pounds over the last
year. Wow, nice.
Oh, wow.
But I want to go lower. I'm still fat. Like, it's not like I'm suddenly like a trim looking dude. I'm still chubby. Like, I went from being on over the line obese.
How tall are you?
Like, on paper obese. Only 164 centimeters, so 5'6", 5'7".
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, it is. Like, it's cool because I have these like body fat calculators and machines and stuff. So I'm sitting at roughly like 27-28% body fat. Which is a lot. Like, it's so even though I'm like fit enough to be in the military, I'm still like struggling with my weight, and I've been doing so for quite a while. So every couple of years, I go back and read like some literature and at least try something different, because whatever I was doing that past year, I tried to do one thing a year at least to see if it has an overall effect. Doesn't seem to be working. So
Have you tried not drinking so much Surge?
We don't have Surge here. I know, right?
What?
I don't even know what Surge is.
Sad life.
Have you considered taking up vaping? I hear that helps.
So last year, I went intermittent fasting when I really need to cut weight. When I was going over again, or like slowly accumulating weight again, I just intermittent fast. What that is, it's 5-2 fasting, essentially having like a third of what you normally eat 2 days out of six. So sorry, seven a year, a week. So literally 5 days you eat normally, if not a little bit more than normally, and 2 days you eat barely anything. And that actually really works. Like, it cuts weight like crazy. Every day you do that, you lose like 2 pounds. But it's really annoying. That sucks.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
it's,
I could not imagine doing that.
I'm sorry, yeah, I'm laughing. Sucks. I pretty much do that already. I didn't eat anything for like, when I got home from work, I just didn't eat at all. I didn't have time. I spent the entire day yesterday just staring at its coding.
And apparently that's really fucking good for you. Like, it's not in terms of like, oh, you just
really?
Lose weight. No,
because I felt like, really bad at the end of the day. It's like,
no, it's
really
actually not
like,
really good for you.
No, it's not.
No, I mean, like, legitimately, like, studies have shown, as in your blood levels, cholesterol levels, et cetera, start improving with time if you
fast. If it's controlled, yes.
Well, no, but like,
and if it's controlled, like, responsibly, because like, yeah, when I was in high school, I decided like my way of trying to lose weight, I was doing like weightlifting at the time.
Yeah.
My way of trying to lose weight was during my weightlifting class, we did a lot of running. And of course did the weightlifting as well. And I decided I was going to, my diet for months consisted of every day. I did not eat breakfast. I ate, a small plate of fries for lunch, and I ate salad for dinner, a small salad for dinner. And that was all I ate for months. Wow. And granted, you know, I went from like 27% body fat down to like 18% and lost a bunch of weight.
Damn.
And then I stopped doing weightlifting and I stopped that diet and it like went up like in like ridiculously high very quickly.
Yep.
It's something you cannot maintain.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just fucking rough. Like, most of the cases, it's really hard to find what you like to eat. That's also good for you and also keeps the weight off. It's almost impossible to find those three things.
What I was saying is what you like to eat and that you are okay with eating for long periods of time.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, what I meant kind of for cynic was like I ate for the past 2-3 days a normal meal and then just like yesterday I just did not eat anything.
Yeah, and if you're doing that like on purpose, like 2 hours a week, it's actually really good for you.
Also, I rode my bike for 10 miles, like 11 miles today.
Nice.
Like three of which was up, 2 to 3 was uphill.
Damn, that's rough, man.
No, it's hurt so much.
There's a reason Thurbleton is the only thin person at this proverbial table.
Because I'm lazy. I'm too lazy to eat.
So the book I read this year and having used it over the last 3-4 weeks, seems to be actually quite effective, but more importantly, it was really informative. So the book itself, the one I was referring to earlier, was released at the end of 2014, but I think it's got too provocative a name to both. A lot of people like disregard it in terms of like what it has to say about nutrition.
Air Force of its name. Gator.
Yeah. So the one I'm going to recommend is the book that's based on, which is written by a dude called Gary Taubes. He is an ex. He's a journalist, but he's a physics journalist. So he went from like talking about the Large Hadron Collider, like a lot of like steps forward.
Sorry, in quantum physics. Let's back up for just a second. Did you say his name is Gary Tubbs?
Taubes, A-U-B-E-S.
Okay. I just
Gary Tubbs.
I couldn't ignore the irony if that was the case. That's
more southern whole heartful name you could not come up with. I'll tell you what.
Gary Tubbs.
America.
So he's a dude who's written about physics for most of his career, and then someone who is also in that circle went like, hey, you should really have a look at the nutritional science because they have like some of the worst science I've ever seen. And he's like, really? So what he did was in 2002 or so and onwards, he went on like a 7 to 10, depending on like which book of his you read, year quest into nutritional science and tries to figure out like why we have the daily recommended intake from the US government the way it is now.
I know one reason.
Yeah, go ahead.
Nutritional facts are given to us in grams because Americans don't know what that is.
See, that would be cool, but like I'm talking about like, so all right, imagine like, this.
Like, I think so it's more so like eating what we eat and how much of it we eat.
Yeah. No. Like it's just straight out. One of the reasons I really love this book is because it's also incredibly entertaining. So consider this. The single most influential study on the 1980s/70s group of dudes who decided the fact that A, the US should mandate a recommended dietary intake, and B, what that recommended dietary intake should be, was a study called the Seven Countries Study. And essentially what that was is a dude went to seven countries and gained nutritional data about the populace and compared that to their risk of heart failure or like dying by diabetes and so on. Generally, it's the sicknesses of getting fat or what they call the diseases of civilization. And he took seven of those countries, and what he produced was this graph, which on the horizontal axis was fat intake and the vertical axis was deaths per capita in terms of heart disease. And what he produced was a graph, which was essentially just a straight graph from the bottom left to the top right, of progressively increasing risk of dying of heart disease compared to how much fat you ate. And that like launched the entire American like food industry in a whole different direction. The crazy thing is, was he actually had 22 data points, not just seven. And when you graph all 22 data points, there's like no correlation whatsoever between the two axes.
And the even crazier part about that is that like that knowledge is out there, and yet we still, as a society, follow that.
Yeah,
like, as a society, there's still this idea that like fat is bad. Fat is bad.
It's absolutely crazy. And so what Gary Taubes does, and he's a journalist, he's not a scientist. He literally goes back and goes, okay, this is the way real fucking scientists do science. They have a hypothesis and they test it and they test it and they test it and they test it and they test it. And then for every time you have a agreeing thing to that hypothesis, you also have to ask yourself why that agrees. And definitely you have to do the same for when something disagrees. So what he does is goes through the last 140 years of nutritional history in a very entertaining way with like lots of stories of like the case studies and how they're conducted and stuff and like the people involved, and shows that the way we understand why we eat is totally fucked up and wrong. So the book I'm recommending is called Why We Get Fat, and What to Do About It by Gary Taubes. It's the shortened version of his other book called Good Calories, Bad Calories, which is the book I read. I read Good Calories, Bad Calories, which is 600 pages with a 45-page bibliography. I was shocked. 45-page bibliography for that book. He went through so much fucking detail, 600 pages of science, and it convinced me that everything I'd known up to now about why I should be eating or what I should be eating is just fucked up. And it's been informed by like all these years of people. One person would have a study which would like be not really very conclusive, but the next person would cite that study based on its conclusion. And obviously in conclusions, you put forward your agreement with your hypothesis. So they treat that as if it was fact, not taking into account that the study itself wasn't very conclusive.
Our whole like idea of how we should eat is basically one long game of telephone.
Exactly. It's insane. And so Gary Taubes actually like goes by study to study to study and says like what the study did, what his conclusions were, and how it was horribly misconstrued by the public, but in a very entertaining way that's very readable. Much in the way like The Martian was a fantastic book about physics, but it actually just turned out to be a great like book to read. So after that, I actually started eating a ketogenic diet. Like, I read the book and it convinced me to eat a ketogenic diet, which was under 50 calories of carbohydrates a day, which is hard to do. And I've lost 6 kilos in the last 5 weeks, 4 weeks.
Yep. You get the majority of your energy from fat, I believe, in that, that diet.
Yes, I do. Like 55 to 65% of my energy.
You know, it's funny, actually. Like, I didn't read any kind of book or anything. Actually, what I did is I watched a documentary on Netflix that didn't have nearly as much science. But it basically what he did is this guy watched Super Size Me and said that's complete bullshit. That can't be true. Yeah. And so he decided to then counterprove it. And decided he was going to also eat nothing but fast food for whatever the period of time was. But he was going to not do it with an angle of like trying to prove his point.
Right.
So what he basically found was he essentially found like what you're saying here, like carbs are not the way that humans are, our bodies are not made to break down carbs into energy as easily as they are, as it is, you know, animal fat or just fat in general. And so what he found is actually like what we would consider a quote unquote high fat diet is incredibly healthy for us compared to what people are generally used to eating. Like if you cut out the vast majority of the carbs, and like he was eating like his breakfast was like a steak and bacon and eggs. And like, it was just like, he had like what, if people looked at this, like, oh my God, this guy's gonna be fucking huge. And no, he was actually losing weight.
Yeah.
When he was eating like the fast food, like he would eat the burgers or whatever, but like he would get them without the bun and he would get like a salad instead of fries. Wouldn't get the soda or whatever. And again, like what he found with that was essentially, without doing any real scientific stuff, like essentially found like, no, fat is actually good for us. It's the carbs that are hurting us, which is basically, if you take our entire food pyramid, it's backwards.
Yeah, it's absolutely backwards. And it's shocking because like him, like he's probably not the first person to do that. And he's not, like I can say factually, he's not. And not in terms of like making a documentary about it, but having that hypothesis and proving it.
Right.
But because society has been so ingrained since the 80s, since specifically that group of dudes who first set out what America needs to be eating in the future, people like them, and probably us now, to people listening to us, sound like absolute whack jobs. Like we just sound like crazy people. Like who?
Well,
like no
we,
one wants.
We do that most of the time. Anyway.
That's true too. I mean, you guys did talk about Honey Pop at some point. So you know,
that again hasn't seen a light of day yet.
Well, okay. We talk about how to have a boyfriend.
I will get that episode out. So read Why We Get Fat by Gary Taubes.
Yeah, I would say read that, and then if you aren't into reading or something, if you're a Dan Reichert son of a bitch. But what I would say is, I think it's got to still be on Netflix at this point. If it's not, you can find it somewhere. But watch the documentary Fathead.
I'm going to do that.
One word or two? That's fantastic.
I think it's one word.
Okay.
You'll find it either way.
Yeah, you'll find it.
Yeah, it's a pretty distinctive.
But yeah, it was incredibly interesting and really eye opening for my wife and I when we watched that.
Yeah, and to put it in perspective, Why We Get Fat is only 250 pages versus the 600 pages that is Good College, Bad College. So it's definitely readable.
Oh, yeah. I need to. Do you know if there's a Kindle version by chance?
Yes, there is. There's a awesome. Kindle version. I have it. There's also a Google Play version. I think there's one on iBooks. There's an audiobook of it. You can get it.
One last thing before we call the show, just something that it's already happened. I don't know if at the time this airing, their Kickstarter is still going on, but it's people may or may not know, AOL dropped the joystick as well as all of its affiliates, video game enthusiasts, news, press, conglomerate, whatever you want to call it. From that category was also massively a website that was more or less just focused on MMOs.
Right.
So a little bit of MOBA coverage, but for the most part, just all the different MMOs that are going on right now, they were the main people to cover it.
And wait, is Massively gone as well?
Yes. And yep. Okay, this is the crazy thing. They were making money. They were making hand over fist, but the previous year they had lost half their staff or something, and they had bounced back from that, and they were still making lots of content, and they had a great following and lots of people who enjoyed it. But just because they were part of the whole video game thing,
Kotaku thing, no, not Kotaku,
no, not Kotaku, joystick
thing,
AOL just dropped them and kicked them to the curb. That being said, because this is a tight knit group and because they have a great following and all that, they have just rebranded as massively OP.net or massively overpowered. And the website's kind of janky right now. Granted, it's being built for free right now. They have a Kickstarter that they've already met their goal. It's the first goal was to build the website, and then hopefully they'll get enough traffic so they can actually,
advertise and shit.
Well, no, so they can pay themselves.
Right, yeah.
Because they're not making any money right now. They're working on stretch goals to get some of their writers to different conventions and whatnot. Because we have 8,000 PAXes. I think Twitch just added its own convention this year as well. So there's a lot of stuff to go to.
That's cool.
But yeah, massively OP. We don't cover the MMO stuff ever down much anymore. But yeah, it's still worth watching.
I like how it's massively OP.net. Yep. .net for some reason sells it for me. I don't know why. Yeah. This works. Yeah, they're talking about games. I like it. That's a good group of dudes. Even though I fell out of MMOs myself, I've always respected massively.com. They're pretty solid.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed their podcast stuff as well.
Yeah. Unlike Joystick, which I never really felt for, but Massively was also always pretty cool.
It's this weird sort of thing, just with the mentality of the average MMO player. It's the two people who do the site. They both have multiple kids, and so every now and then you'll hear a kid crying in the background, or just comes up, and they don't edit that out. It's adorably awesome.
I like it. It's like right. it's like an element of it's differentiation. Humanoid, yeah. Between the two groups of people,
MMO
players
touch.
For some reason.
That's all I got. If you go to the website, you don't lose weight or anything, but
And I'm going to harangue Thurbleton. If you see three episodes suddenly hit the RSS, it's because of this. Now I'm going to harangue Thurbleton to send me those files so I can publish those. I'll probably get them up in the next couple of days. So
thanks for listening, everybody. More. Goodbye.